How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or f*** with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities.
They are doing this by developing gender-affirming, client-centered models of service.
Ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available.
And supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support.
Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for the trans members of our community.
Morning. Here with Off the Beaten Path, here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And for the next hour, I'll be taking you down my path We're broadcasting from the unceded Musqueam and Coast Salish territory. This will be the best hour of your week. I guarantee it. If you've never joined us before, what we like to do here is talk about some local news. We like to talk about some like regional, national news. We like to talk about some news from down south. And then really anything interesting that I feel has come up during the week. This has been a very interesting week, but I myself have been very, very busy with my day job because the rent is due. I feel like that is a statement that pretty much everybody understands, that, hey, rent is due, and that means you got to go to work and you got to make things happen. But before we move on to get into, just before we get into the show, I think that something really needs to be recognized. This was brought to my attention over the course of the last few days, not particularly because of something. I wouldn't say like this is something that is in the forefront of the media that gets pushed to me, because, you know, as we get into talking about some of the things that happened this particularly yesterday, we're going to get into like how do we get information. But this is something that you might not have heard of. So if you are not live in Saskatchewan, or you're not First Nations, or, you know, those issues aren't top of mind for you and you don't seek out this information, you might not have heard of it. But fortunately and unfortunately for me, these are the type of circles that I travel in. This is the type of news that I really, I don't welcome the news, but I like to stay informed. And just really trying to understand about, like, what's the relationship between people? Because that's the most interesting part of me. And oftentimes, I'm saddened by how awful we, not only can the relationship between people be in the moment, but even afterwards when we see, the level of justice or retribution that people get nowadays, particularly if you are one of, like, the less desired. Because that's, I mean, and when we say less desired, I'm talking about from a, like, white gaze, like, the less desired, that's, you know, the minorities, you know, the people who continue to be oppressed, like, systematically, and things haven't changed. So if you didn't know, in 2016, in August, a young man named Colton Bushy was murdered on a farm in Saskatchewan, and this came up this past week because the jury just found the assailant not guilty on all charges. Now, you can look up the case, because it will be very difficult to give you all of the facts, but basically the victim, Colton, was shot in the back of the head as he was on this farm. And not only was he shot in the back of the head, he was shot through the windshield. And not only was he shot through the windshield, the owner of, the assailant says that he accidentally shot him in the back of the head. And if you go on to CBC, it talks about all of the the concerns brought up by Bushy's family and the defense. And when you look at it, this is not very it seems to be very similar to a lot of the cases where we talk about police and extrajudicial killings in the states, except for this is, I don't want to compare the treatment of black people in the states and the police to the treatment of Aboriginal people here. However, this wasn't even a police officer. This was just a regular guy who shot someone, you know, on his property through the windshield in the back, and the jury found him not guilty. And so we expect jury to have, I would say in theory, we expect jury to have like oversight and some discretion, but I feel like it is, if you're part of one of the minority groups that is oppressed, you, leaving it up to a jury of people who look like the assailant rarely leads to us to like the desired level of justice that we seek. And so this is not one of those times where people would be satisfied. One, because you're never going to get Colton back, so that, you know, he's a son and, you know, a nephew and a cousin to people. And, you know, those people have lost him forever. So not only do they not get him back, but you don't feel like you get any justice. And, you know, somebody just got away with murdering your family. So I think that there's a lot to look into. And so if this is something that interests you, then you should definitely take a look. But we have to understand that people need to be able to rely on the justice system for it to be like fact. There's lots of things, particularly in our country here, and like particularly around the world, that people, like, justice relies on truth and faith and like a trust, and like just like an overall trust of like the system. And as we continue to see the system just break for people, there's eventually going to come to a point where people have had enough. And so this article talks about how Justin Trudeau says, you know, Indigenous people across the country are angry and heartbroken, and Indigenous and non-Indigenous Canadians alike know that we have to do better. But what the hell is that? Like, what is he actually saying? I find myself, I don't want to talk about Trudeau now, but this is, we do know we have to do better, but when is somebody going to actually do better? But we're going to get into the show. And so what we like to do in the show, we like to start off with the weather. I feel like the weather gives you just like an insider's, understanding about like what is it like here in Vancouver if you're not here. And today, with a high of 5, it's going to rain. It's also going to rain Friday. It's going to rain Saturday. I thought we were getting out of winter. Like, I was excited last weekend on Sunday, Monday, sunny outside. It was so sunny on Sunday, and I knew I had the day off on Monday. Looked at the forecast, was like, oh, snap, it's about to be sunny on Monday, too. I don't have to leave my house on Sunday. So I didn't even feel bad about not leaving my house on Sunday because the weather was so nice. But looking at it, like, I shouldn't have taken that sunny day for granted, because while Monday was beautiful, I was able to go on a nice short hike. This weekend is looking to be shaping up as awful. So with the weather down with lows of 4 and 0, and even on Monday, it'll be a high of 0 and a low of -3. I just don't understand why on the sunniest days we can't have warm weather, but on the rain days we get warm. While I understand the weather patterns, I just would like a nice sunny 8-9 degree day. I don't think that's too much to ask for. But if who's ever listening, if you like praying to whatever rain god that you like, please send him my way. I would say let's just get right into news, because we started a little bit with Vancouver news. And when I look at Vancouver news, I go to the Vancouver Sun, or I go to CBC, or I go to there's lots of other smaller news publications here in Canada. And one of the, I thought it was very interesting that, like, you know, we talked about homelessness, housing, drugs here in Vancouver. Like, those are the things, Site C, construction, and, for the past couple of weeks, we've been talking about this battle between British Columbian government and Albertan government. And so what you need to do is remember, if you listen to this radio station, buy British Columbian wine, because we would not bend to those Albertans, because I've lived in Canada for over 2 years now. And like, while there are some Albertans I like, I don't really want to, like, I feel like that the coastline is part of my identity as a Vancouverite, and I'm not willing to risk it for you guys. The head page, I mean the front page of the Vancouver Sun, the premier story on here. So we talk about, like, how there's nothing going on. There's no news. It's not, like, exciting. It's not exciting or dangerous or anything. But today you would also, I would am justified in saying that, because the headline story was a River Rock Casino's top VIP hostess no longer at casino following deregistration. Like, the seminal story in Vancouver for what is going on today, or in the last 24 hours, whenever the last time they updated this website, is about a VIP hostess having her license taken away for violating anti-money laundering. And while I'm sure there's lots of people who think that's a big deal, I'm sure there's an incredible amount of people who go into work every day, fighting anti-money laundering. You know, they're at the bank. Maybe they live in Toronto. Maybe they don't live in Toronto. Maybe they live here in BC. Maybe they live in Burnaby or something. You know, this is what they think about all the time. You know, how can we catch any anti-money launderers? How can we catch these money launderers? I mean, and so they found one. They found one at the casino. And Vancouver Sun thought it was such a big story that they had to write a story on it. Now, I, like, read it, the story, expecting for a plot twist. Like, I was waiting for just something crazy to happen, and it never came. So this is how you know the Vancouver local news, and it's really why it's, like, you know, it's pretty hard to, you know, to continue to talk about it. Like, who cares? I feel like talking about the Winter Olympics is almost like talking about Canada. And when we get back, we're going to go into that, even though there are no Canadian athletes who I have any idea of, and that's fine. But when we get back, we're going to be talking a little bit about some Winter Olympics, mostly the funny stories, and I'll give you a medal count, and I'm going to tell you how you can make up your Valentine's Day if you missed yesterday. And I think that alone, and for that, is a reason why you should continue to listen after the break. If you'd like to call in, the number is 604-822-CITR. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Listen, you can call and tell me anything. Call and tell me how your Valentine's Day went. Call and tell me how maybe your second Valentine's Day is going to go today with your side chick. All right. See you in 41 seconds.
Disability doesn't make you exceptional, but questioning what you think you know about it does.
Accessibility, disability, mental health, ADHD, ADD, and many more topics we explore and cover.
But on where, you say?
It's CITR's All Access Pass.
A unique and collectively blend show on equity, inclusion, and creating awareness for people of all abilities in BC and around the world.
Catch us every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 5. If you want more info or to get involved, please find us on Facebook or send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Let me
get you. I'm dying to see you. I wanna see you right now. It's been a year now. I shed a tear down. My face dripping, drown my feelings. Into this long text, I wonder what is next. Will I catch real feelings for you? How could this be pointless? I should have avoided this. But what if this is real? I'm dying to see you. I wanna see you right now. It's been a year now. I shed a tear down. My face dripping, drown my feelings. Into this long text, I wonder what is next. Will I catch real feelings for you? How could this be pointless? I should have avoided this. But what if this is real?
Don't care what nobody say. 1,000 miles in the way. You pick the time and the day. I got it. You knew when right from the start.
You. I'm dying to see you.
I wanna see you right now.
It's been a year now. I shed a tear down. My face dripping, drown my feelings. Into this long text, I wonder what is next. Will I catch real feelings for you? How could this be pointless? I should have avoided this. But what if this is real?
I hope you get this message. I hope to see you soon. It's really cold down here in London, so we've been talking for about 3 years now, and I really want to see you soon. I hope your tour comes soon.
You're back at Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. And if you thought, if you were listening to the show and you were like, you know what I can do? He's not going to give me a Black History fact today. You're wrong. And if you were like, you know, hoping that maybe this might be an opportunity to learn something, you're right. And so, of course, I'm getting you Black History fact today. Not only is it February the 15th, so, you know, if this month was proper, it'd be smack in the middle. But it is the national public release date of Black Panther, so... Everybody going to see Black Panther, you know, fist up. But it's also just another day in February and another opportunity for you to learn something. So little did you know that there was one of the most successful people during Reconstruction was a Black woman by the name of Sarah Breedlove. Now, many know Sarah as her pseudonym, Madam C.J. Walker. So if you don't know about Madam C.J. Walker, Madam C.J. Walker is a Black woman. She was a Black woman. She was an African-American entrepreneur, a philanthropist. She was an activist. And she was the first female self-made millionaire in America. Not the first Black self-made millionaire. Not the first Black woman self-made millionaire, but she was the first woman self-made millionaire. And she was one of the most wealthy. She was one of the wealthiest Black women in the country and one of the most successful entrepreneurs during her time ever. And so if you don't know about Madam C.J. Walker, she made her money through her hair care products and her manufacturing company. But this is something that I didn't learn until I went to the National Museum for African American History and Culture in Washington, D.C., which if you ever get a chance, if you're in D.C. and you get to go to one museum, I think that it is the one that you should go to. Listen, I've been to them all. I was fortunate enough to grow up there and fortunate enough where I was able to like frequent museums, and it's always a treat. Like every time I go back home, I go there and I check it out. But so one of the things I learned while there was that not only was Madam C.J. Walker a business magnate, like in understanding, you know, manufacturing and the sales of her product, but she also opened beauty schools. So I'm not saying that Madam C.J. Walker, you know, had the first pyramid business, because I feel like a pyramid scheme, I feel like they're all pyramid schemes, but she started she started like a hair salon school. It then had hair, what is it? Like a hair salonist? Hairstylist? Hairstylist, let's go with that. Yeah, then she had hairstylists who were doing people's hair, and she was also selling her product to them, and they were also flipping it to some other people, you know, to the people getting hair done. So, you know, she created, the demand existed, and she created, you know, a pipeline to get the final consumer her hair while also teaching some skills. And so if you want to learn more about Madam C.J. Walker, you can Google her. If you want to learn more about, you know, rich black people in Reconstruction, because if you believe that all black people were poor during that time, or, you know, struggling, or have been struggling since we got here in North America, that's just not true. We've always had people who have had much success despite everything that went on. And you oftentimes see that these people recognize that this wasn't a given, and this wasn't their God-given right, or this God-given talent that they have in not only a responsibility, but like feel like a moral obligation to give back and be an activist and a philanthropist. And so like it's part of the black radical tradition. We are going to talk. I can't do the math right now, but next week might be our last or second to last. But we'll talk about Angela Davis and what her work has meant to me personally when we get back next week. So moving on to the Olympics. So I was really disappointed to see that Germany is in the Winter Olympics, is winning the Winter Olympics currently with 15 medals. Norway has 17, but they only have 6 gold compared to Germany's 9. The Netherlands have 12. United States shitting the bed with 8. And Canada's got 13, but most of them are silver and bronze. I feel like the joke is already written there, so, you know, I don't have to say it. But I'm looking at the countries who are even in the medal count. So you look at these countries, so Germany, Norway, Netherlands, United States, Canada, Sweden, France, Austria, Italy, Korea, Japan, Australia, China, SVK. Somebody call in, tell me what that means. OAR. They don't even have a flag. Check. Like all of these countries, like we know what the damn Winter Olympics is. The Winter Olympics is self-esteem boosting for countries that can't seem to get it done in the Summer Olympics. And when I say can't seem to get it done, they don't got the people. They don't have the squad. And the United States is only up here because the United States got a squad. Even if those people, you know, reluctantly wear the flag, they might even knee. I would be interested to see, like, what if the Summer Olympics were like this year, with people knee on the podium, because that would be a sight to see. But getting back to the point, listen, we know what's going on in this Olympics. This is self-esteem boosting for, you know, people who, when they go to Black Panther screening, they might not eat all the chicken off of the bone. And if you see those people in the screening, be wary. They might be the feds, because let you know, they will be watching. They might be documenting, but I don't know if they'll be able to take a picture of me and my dashiki, because I will be shining tonight to stay on the Olympics. So there's like a couple of interesting things that have been going on this week. One of them is that there is a, I guess what you would say, a fake Kim Jong-un who wanted to meet the North Korean cheerleaders. This fake Kim Jong-un who showed up at Pyeongchang Olympics ceremony, just the opening ceremony, just as North Korean leader Kim Jong-un is not Korean, and his name is Howard from Australia. Now, I, reading the story, I was like, okay, you know, what is this? Is he really a North Korean? Is he really a Kim Jong-un lookalike? Or is this just like something that's just like, well, all these Asian people look alike, and we're going to write a story about how he kind of looks like Kim Jong-un? But I saw a picture of him, and I would say that this person looks like a Kim Jong-un duplicate. And I feel like that's what the look he was going for. So he's playing like on our like visual, you know, not able, you know, lack of sensory ability to, you know, to tell the difference between him and Kim Jong-un. And anyways, he didn't actually get past. So I just think it's funny that like somebody would actually go dress like him, and that these cheerleaders are actually getting like these big buzz, like to the point where North Korea has, I don't want to say that they become a a figure where people have been, placing empathy on North Korea. I saw a few stories earlier this week about Kim Jong-un's sister, where people were talking, you know, being sympathetic to her, it's just interesting. Like, when did we go left, or when did we change? Like, when did we decide who's bad and who's not? Like, where are these decisions being made? But to stay not on the funny stories, but this is kind of sad. So I don't know if you know, if you've ever heard of a movie called Cool Runnings, but there's a movie that came out in the 90s. Called Cool Runnings, where the Jamaican bobsled team is loosely, I mean, very, 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 very loosely based on the men's Jamaican bobsled team competing in the Olympics in Calgary, I think, in 1988. But in 2018, there was a women's Jamaican bobsled team who is set to compete, and their coach quit yesterday. And not only did their coach quit, but their coach owns the bobsled. So there is a possibility that she could take the bobsled with them, which I think would be overall disappointing and be a bad look. But I could understand you don't want to take your ball and go home. But it is apparently a feud between the Jamaican Federation, Olympic Federation, and the coach, not between the athletes and the coach, which I think is the most interesting part. I look forward to seeing the Jamaicans compete in the bobsled, but this is like one of those examples where we're like, we don't got to do everything that they do. You know what I mean? If you're listening to me, like, and you feel me, like you feel me on a level, like, yo, we don't have to do everything that they do. Like, I personally, there's some things that I can do. I just leave it up to other people. Like skiing. I'm like, you know what? You got that. Yeah, I like learn how to ski, but you got it. I'll chill over here in the hot tub and enjoy myself, you know, while you get sweaty and pay for a really expensive hobby. But, you know, but there's also some things that I do that probably people would say the same thing about my activities. Bobsledding, probably one of those things I'll leave to them. I'm like, I see the luge. I see the medal count. We'll just come up with our own games that allow us to pat ourselves on the back. And, you know, and maybe we'll leave some of your games alone, because once we get in them, it's over. And if you know what if you pick up what I'm putting down, probably on the same team. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about the 12th mass shooting that has happened in the States so far this year. And not only is it the 12th mass shooting, but it is the third out of the 10 largest mass shootings in the States. In the world. 3 have come in the last 4 months, and we're going to be getting into the last one when we get back.
The question and answer portion of the lecture with Professor Michel Foucault will now begin. You in the back there.
Hello, Professor Foucault. How might we begin to understand the nature of this thing that you call sexuality?
First and foremost, it is this. The nature of sexuality is to be found in the February 2018 issue of Discorder magazine.
This month's issue of Discorder magazine is themed around sexuality. Features include necking, Pace Society, Coconuts and Bananas, Dark Time Festival, Vancouver's Bathhouses, plus regular RLAs and under reviews. The advertisers for the issue are UBC AMS, the Rio Theater, Blueprint, Timber Concerts, the Cinematheque, the Rickshaw, Mint Records. There are over 100 distribution locations across Vancouver. Visit discorder.ca for more info.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. It's also, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism as opposed to someone who buys,
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Actually, is it? Because, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
Faded love, I get my white cup up before I get my white girl up. Before I get my half Dominican girl up, I need real love. I'm going on my fourth trip of the day. I keep a full third bird Jamaican. I'ma find your G-spot like you dropped the location. Man, I'ma give all this shit up one day. Get some love from a video vixen on a runway. You can't hold it against a king, baby. You should've made me better what I need. You should've upgraded me already. You should've made love to me already. I done spent $1 million on you already. I done bought diamonds for you already. If you love, you can teach me. You wanna learn, take your father in Jerusalem. But it's my turn, we so spiritually connected. We going in the right direction.
Yeah.
You're back with Off the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR Vancouver radio station. I'm your host, Issa Arian. If you'd like to call in, the number is 604-822-2487. That's 604-UBC-CITR. Now, this past week, we've had a few things that have gone through legislation, and then issues that have highlighted that maybe we need a few more things to go through, some legislation in the United States. So if you watched the news yesterday, you would have learned that there was a school shooting in Broward County in Florida that took the life of 17 children. And when I mean like take the life, like, you know, their life was snatched from them while they were at school. Getting into the story is pretty recycled. I mean, when I say recycled, I mean, like, this thing's it happens so frequently that learning the details, while important, and while important to remember that these were kids at school, it's also important to remember, like, when I say we, I mean, like, as an American, just, like, allow these things to continue, presumably in perpetuity, because nobody seems to be making any concessions about whether these things should change anytime soon. So there was a a kid from the school went into the school with an AR-15 and shot shot lots of people. He was taken into custody. Is watching the interviews of the students. I was watching the interviews of the students and listening to what they say, and like really putting myself back as a 16, 17 year old high school, student, and just thinking about some of the things that I would say. So they had a kid on there who was talking about, like, I can't remember the I don't really want to talk about the shooter or his name, mention his name, but he was talking about, like, yo, let's call him Tommy. He was like, yo, we expected Tommy would be the one who shoot up the school, and lo and behold, Tommy brought guns in and shot up the school. Like, he was obsessed with guns. His mom had tried to get the police to talk to him. This is, like, something that people know. Like, yo, there's kids in school. Everybody has felt like, yo, if there was one kid who was going to do it, it'd probably be that kid. And maybe we were all right. And the timing just never happened, so we were just very lucky. But it seems to be that this is, as people have this easy access to guns, like, this is just something that they can do. Since Columbine, this is just something that we know. We know that these teens, teenagers harbor this angst and harbor this angriness. And, like, they would do lots of things that they would never do without a gun. Like, this kid would never go up to the school and put his hand and try and strangle 17 people out. I mean, he might, but I doubt he would be able to get to 17. Highly doubt be able to strangle 17 people, stab, murder 17 people. Like, we continue to talk, the discussion continues to be around, whether we need to keep the guns or whether we don't need to keep the guns. The idea is just that the guns make it easier. And, you know, this is coming from someone who believes that, you know, a large part of the problem, particularly have in America, particularly in, like, the communities that I reside in, is that, you know, we don't have enough protection from people who want to harm us. Like, there's not enough protection from there's not enough protection. So, like, if you look at the Colton, he wasn't protected. Like, if you look at the way, you know, these police officers were indicted in Baltimore, you know, for their racketeering and conspiracy charges, like, there's no protection from the people with the strength. And, you know, guns help you get that protection. But even from, you know, from now understanding that, you know, just because you should be able to have a gun doesn't mean you should just be able to buy it over the counter. Like a teenage, like a few years ago, they were trying to make it easier in Florida for teenagers to buy guns. And what is the point of that? Like, never in high school did I need a gun. Like, I don't understand. And as this mother who was concerned, I mean, I didn't read the story and I don't know where he got the gun from, but how concerned you could you have been if you were so concerned you needed to call the police, but you weren't so concerned that you needed to check his room to see where he was hiding the gun, or, you know, check his belongings, see if he was hiding bullets. I mean, because you can't hide that. You can't hide the whole thing. You gotta, you know, he's gotta leave some clues. Like, he's in high school. He's a kid. He's stupid. But it's just interesting that we continue to have the same conversation about gun control. We continue to have a conversation about, you know, whether, you know, with guns or people, and understanding that one, some of these kids are just broken. Like, it's interesting. Learning about, just like men in general, and understanding that we have and learning about, like, humans, and, like, knowing that humans need purpose, and you need, like, and to be fulfilled, and that doesn't just start as an adult, but it starts as, you know, as a kid as well. And so, like, looking at boys particularly, it's like, where do you fit? Like, where do they fit? And not just, you know, not just in the idea of where do, like, you know, what is their role going to be? Because we know that, listen, like, it's not like men are giving up power and giving up these power positions, like, willingly. And we know we're just, like, sitting around trying to figure out what, you know, okay, so what are we going to do next? You know, it's more just like the language and the way that people are spoken to is they just don't know, or they don't feel like they do have a place, or they don't feel like they fit, or don't feel like a place where they can be that anymore, where, you know, we had these clear delineations of these roles that used to, I mean, that while they weren't right, they worked. And, well, I meant to say, when I say they worked, I mean, they didn't work for everybody. Like, nothing ever works. Like, there's no situation of oppression that works for everybody. But it was orderly. And so, like, orderly doesn't mean works. So it's interesting, you know, that now as we're looking at that, and we are coming to this understanding that, you know, there are lots of boys in particular, because we don't see girls. Girls don't go up in schools and shoot up people. That doesn't happen. So, you know, there's something about men, boys, that I feel like needs a more serious look beyond the obvious that we should do something about the guns. Because when they wrote when they were thinking about keeping a well-regulated militia, not only was it to protect, you have to think, in 1776, it wasn't just, hey, we need to protect ourselves from a tyrannical government, but the West hadn't even been explored yet. They were still talking about, you know, trying to kill Indians and try to mar runaway slaves and expand the frontier west. So they needed guns, and the guns that they had I don't know if that's the pump action, you know, the musket where you got to stuff the bullet down, but it couldn't have been too far away from that. And so thinking about, okay, what type of guns do the United States government have, and what type of, you know, guns do these Indians have, and what type of guns do you have, do, you know, these other people like the Spanish and the French have? They all got the same ones. I mean, there wasn't that many gun manufacturers, but now they got lasers, they got sound technology, they have, you know, they can create earthquakes and all types of stuff. And you and your AR-15, it's not competing. And maybe that's naivete, but maybe it will compete, and that's what the, you know, the trick is that United States government's army, you know, weaponry isn't that complex. However, I've seen some of those videos of them dropping bombs in Syria and in Iraq, and I'm like, what am I going to do against that? They didn't have planes in 1776. They weren't worrying about that. They weren't worrying about bombers and jets. Worrying about cannons, guns, formations, cavalry. Now we're worried about these other things. And unless one of these Nebraskans or Floridians know how to fly a fighter jet, we might as well, we probably should figure out another way how we can keep our government in checks and balances. When we get back, we're going to be going to some funny stories, and I'm going to tell you how you might be able to salvage your Valentine's Day if you messed it up last night. And so this would be very, very valuable. If you're driving to work, you're getting ready in the shower, and maybe your woman is mad at you, maybe your side chick is mad, I'm going to tell you how to make it up. I think it'll be worth the wait. You're back with All the Beaten Path here on 101.9 CITR, Vancouver's radio station. Thank you for tuning in. If you like listening to the show, you can listen to the past episodes on mixcloud.com/offthebeatenpath. You can find me on facebook.com/otpp20xx. You can listen to me, Homeboy Jules, Jamal Steele, Relly Rails, and Horsepower on Tuesdays, Crimes and Treasons here on 101.9. from 8 to 10, or you can find us on crimesandtreasons.com for archived episodes there as well. Last week we had Cut Corners, in which Nancy come on to talk a little bit about what they're doing next weekend on the 25th. You should check it out. It is called Rise and Shine, and it's talking about particularly about some of the grants and the artistry grants and some of the other things that are going on here in Canada about ways that you can get your music heard, if, or maybe you can meet people to collaborate on music. You can listen to some performances from Soloki and Prado and Nina Mendoza and a bunch of other people. You should check it out next Sunday, the 25th. It's free. Getting back into the news. To wrap up our show. So basically, this is going to be a new segment. So in the last 5 minutes, it's called I'm going to run it down for you. You know what I mean? Just let you know on everything that you need to know. So if you forgot yesterday was Valentine's Day, or maybe you got two chicks and you only can hang out with one, or maybe you got, you know, you're a woman and you got two dudes and you're like, you know, you have to, you know, you have to make the tough decision about who you were going to hang out with yesterday. And you need to make it up today. You can't. I'm sorry. I've been in that position before. And the person who you're giving Valentine's Day to the next day doesn't give a shit whether you forgot, whether it slipped your mind, whether you really, really wanted to be there or not. You know, maybe if you had to work, that might be a little different, but that's about it. If this might worry you, but so you know how Snapchat, if you take a screenshot of the story or of the conversation, it alerts the other person that you took a screenshot. Well, Instagram is doing the same thing. Some users have already been receiving an in-app warnings for this kind of behavior. Apparently, the first time Instagram lets you slide, but cautioned that a second offense will be flagged to the other user. So stop taking screenshots of people's stories. Now, I was really wondering if this was going to, when I clicked on the story, was this was going to affect just taking screenshots of people's Instagrams in general, but no, it just affects the story so you can be safe. And you know, like my favorite story, so we love to talk about this. A lion pack eats a suspected poacher in South Africa, and I, you know how much I love these stories. It's not like I love people getting killed, but you're a poacher. You're trying to, you know, kill lions for their pelt. Listen, I just love to see animals fighting back, because what this meant was this poacher was in the element. Not only was he in the element, he had a gun, and he was ready to go. And he was like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm going to get this. And it's not like you can't see lions coming. Like, yo, he had to know. Like, he's a tracker. He had to know, yo, I'm being tracked. And he was trying to get away. I just imagine, like, the hunter becoming the hunted. Like, he's in the safari in the jungle, and he's walking around, and he's, like, looking at these lion tracks. And as he's looking at these tracks, he's realizing that they actually are circling back to him. And I could just imagine the fear in this man and the lack of respect he had for the animals in the first place. So, you know, if you're kin to this man and you listen to his radio show and you want to call next week, cuss me out, do it. But if not, you know how I feel about these people. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for tuning in to the last hour. We do this every week, Thursday, 7-8. I promise it'll be the best hour of your week, and you might go into the weekend learning something new. See you next week, guys.
LGBTQ2I Night is a positive space for folks to learn about